Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hey folks, welcome to Onto Waveland. It's presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. We are here to talk all things Cubs for you, because it's the Athletics Cubs podcast. That's how it works. The Cubs were off yesterday after their weekend series against the Pirates, which itself had followed the three-game sweep of the Dodgers. But since the Pirates are, you know, so much better than the Dodgers, the Cubs were able to take only two of those games against the Pirates. You know, we'll start with that series, and because obviously it was the most recent series, but I'm going to just say up front, I personally don't have a ton to say about that series in particular. Obviously, there were some injury issues that popped up that are notable, and we'll get some more information on those in the coming days. But, you know, three games, all decided by a run. Really could have gone either way, all those games. You know, the first game of the series, the Cubs almost blew it. The last game of the series, the Pirates almost blew it. And I don't know. I don't feel any more or less informed about any huge topics from that series. It was nice to see the Cubs win a series against a team they are supposed to beat. But, you know, did I just whiff and miss anything really big or interesting that came out of those three particular games?
I mean, the only thing I took away was they can win the, with this group that they have, they can win some games without hitting homers. With the wind blowing in at Wrigley, you know, it's a bad, they beat a bad team, so you take it with a grain of salt.
Here's the last game for the Pirates.
But,
you've got to leave that in, Tim, producer, because so that I'm holding my, when someone else starts to speak, I switch my microphone to my left hand and I kind of hold it away from my face so that I'm not making sounds. Well, for some reason, my watch must have heard something about the Cubs and Pirates game. And so I don't even want to say her name. The Apple assistant must have thought she heard her name and was like, oh, I'll tell you about the Pirates game. I guess she had some thoughts
more than I did
about this series.
See? So there were some thoughts about the Pirates series. But ultimately, yeah, I don't think there's no grand conclusions to be taken from that series. It was, you know, just those first two games, winning with a bunch of singles, I think matters in a sense. But also, you can't take too much away from it in general. It's just the beginning of a long stretch against poor teams, and you'd like to see them try and clean up here over the next three-ish weeks.
Yeah, my only two takeaways were, like, it didn't seem like that huge momentum boost just when you saw these guys, you know, Mariznick collapsing to the grass and essentially taking him out of the game, you know, like, he knew something was wrong, and the Cubs talking about it as, this is pretty bad, we'll be missing him for a while. Jason Hayward get pinched, hit four. Looking at some of the names on the injured list, I know every team goes through this, so I'm not saying the Cubs are exceptional in some ways, but you just wonder how much more more injuries they can absorb. And then just, you know, it took a lot of effort to get back to 500. And I believe they're 5-4 against the Pirates, but 6-0 against the Dodgers and Mets, which is curious and odd. So it's kind of what they deserve, right? I mean, they're about a 500 team, and it's up to them to kind of prove otherwise here over the next several weeks and 2+ months, whatever it is.
Yeah. I mean, good point from both of you there that we've said it before, but this approximately 3-week stretch of very winnable games, if the Cubs are going to be an above 500 team when it matters, i.e. in July, mid-July and beyond, they're going to have to win at a greater ratio against a terrible team like the Pirates. So, you know, they kick off that stretch tonight against the Indians, not a terrible team, although they've been no-hit twice, right? Of the four no-hitters this year, it's twice them, which is odd. And, of course, Cubs get Shane Bieber tonight, which is going to be a tough matchup. But on the Cubs side, they get Adbert Alzolay pitching again, a guy who, you know, we've talked about many times, who is been, you know, highly effective for those first 5-ish innings. We'll see as he continues to go this year if the ability to stretch out a little past that 80-pitch mark and be effective continues, or more likely the Cubs are probably just going to have to manage him that way this year. But his presence and his effectiveness, paired with the continued success we've seen from Justin Steele, paired with some early success from Keegan Thompson, all manifesting themselves this weekend in that Pirates series and beforehand, which is why it didn't really jump out to me necessarily in this series, has me thinking about whether we're finally in this period of time where, okay, the Cubs are finally having some entirely homegrown pitchers step forward, cover innings, pitch in an impactful way, and this is maybe just the tip of the spear, you know, where that we've talked about the transformation in the farm system, both at a philosophical level and at a development level, to try to push out more impactful pitching over the last 3 years or so. And you look up and down the farm system, you look at the prospect rankings, and you're like, okay, it's actually now pretty evenly distributed throughout the system that the Cubs have some quality pitching prospects up and down, that maybe this is the start of us kind of seeing like, okay, finally the Cubs can make more of their financial weight available on the positional side because they aren't having to spend $100 million every year on pitching. And then you catch yourself, right? It's like, okay, well, but are these really the three guys who are starting that process, or are we just so desperate to have these things to talk about because it's been like 7 years since the Cubs have had multiple impactful arms entirely homegrown on the roster? And, you know, that's where I am. I sort of am catching myself. I think there is something positive happening, but it's probably not quite as dramatic as we might want to make it seem since it's been so long.
Yeah, you know, I think we touched on this last podcast or maybe the podcast before, but I feel like there's something with Alzolay. And I think that's a big stepping stone in the sense that, you know, I don't know. I need to see more, but I believe from who I've talked to, the Cubs believe that's a big sign that things can work with their new pitching infrastructure. There's a lot of people that worked with Alzolay. Obviously, he's immensely talented. 99% of the credit goes to him, but he's also being coached up in a way. The fact that he can take the coaching and implement all the instruction is on him, right? But there's some stuff going on behind the scenes that I believe really helped him become the pitcher that he is. Because, I mean, that slider, he didn't have it, 9 months ago, right? And now it's one of the best sliders in baseball. So I think they kind of look at that as proof of concept. You know, you don't apply the same stuff to everyone, but there are ways that they believe that they can identify things with certain pitchers and they can apply it across the system, right? And apply certain concepts and kind of extract value out of various pitchers. I don't know. I haven't dug into what's going on, like what they worked with on Steele, but I think Justin Steele looks like a pretty electric arm out of the bullpen. I don't know what he'd be as a starter. I don't think they're going to try and convert him into a starter. I think he's just had a ton of success. Just watching him and then digging into the numbers, it opened my eyes even more. But immediately when I watched him come up and I saw him pounding the zone with his four-seamer and guys just swinging through it repeatedly and repeatedly, I was like, okay, that's clearly there's something going on with this four-seamer. Guys cannot catch up to it. There's some deception here. It's moving in a way that, you know, the spin, and it has the rise, and obviously it's a type of pitch that kind of has unique characteristics that can work in the zone. So those two guys, I think there's something there. I don't know what direction you can take them. We need to see Alzolay build more innings. Is he really a 6-7 inning starter? Is he a new school starter? Is Steele the perfect type of reliever, that two-inning lefty reliever that you can bring in a couple times a week? That's a huge weapon in today's game, I believe. Thompson in general, I don't know yet. I'm obviously zero ERA, the results, you cannot complain, but he's not missing any bats. He's gotten two swings and misses in 111 pitches. I know it's early, but that's ridiculously low. That's a really low number. I can't remember everything that I had in the piece that I published that was published this morning, but basically I think there are two pitchers in all of baseball that have thrown at least 100 pitches and have a below 5% swinging strike rate. It's him and Brett Anderson. He's never been someone, Keegan Thompson's never really been someone that's gotten a ton of ground balls in the minors. So, you know, you need one of those two to really thrive. And, you know, maybe this cutter that is pretty new, it can be a difference maker. I don't think it's a bat misser, but we'll see. You know, I'm not trying to say that the kid has no future. I'm just saying that pump the brakes on the zero ERA. I mean, I think he does everything that Ross has been harping on, right? Ross has been kind of sick of talking about, like, Rapsodo stuff and pitch lab stuff. Not that he doesn't believe in that stuff. It's just like there's more to baseball. Go out and perform. Show me that you can get results. And he's done that. He's stepped up in big moments twice, that spot start and then relieving Trevor Williams. Those are the types of things when you talk about intangibles. I think the guy has mound presence. I think the guy is not afraid to go up there and try and attack hitters. I just don't know. Eventually, he has a lot of called strikes right now. Eventually, our guy's going to be aggressive with that and start putting those in the gap or over the fence. I don't know. I just want to wait and see with him and see what more comes. I'm really impressed with Steele and Alzolay, though, because they have some unique pitches that work in today's game really effectively.
I think since we've all hammered the Cubs for being just a total black hole in terms of, like, developing amateur pitchers, that it's okay to point out when a couple of things go right and put it in the broader context of all these changes that they're making behind the scenes in their scouting department, in their player development systems. Like, I mean, it was just awful in this department. And when you can see signs of progress, it doesn't mean that, like, you're predicting future greatness here. It's just that, like, bare minimum competency in these areas would really make a big difference for this team. I mean, no matter what they're developing, they should still be in the market for, you know, pitchers who command $100 million or more, like, every couple of years. Like, that's just what big market teams do. And I mean, I looked it up, I wrote it this the other day, like, between 2012 and 2020, the Cubs drafted 176 pitchers, and only two won a game for the big league club during the Theo era. Rob Zee won two, and Dwayne Underwood won one in a seven-inning doubleheader last year. So when you get Steele and Thompson earning their first big league wins in a matter of 5 days, and Alzolay, who was not drafted but was a homegrown guy, you know, matches Walker Buehler for five innings, like, that's not totally insignificant, especially when you see that the Cubs are not giving Pedro Strop a roster spot and that they're DFAing Brandon Workman, like, eight innings into a one-year deal, a guy who's been part of two World Series teams. Like, they're giving these guys opportunity. And, you know, Steele got $1 million out of high school. Like, they saw something in there. He's left-handed. And Keegan Thompson, like Dave Ross said, was an SEC Friday night starter at Auburn, pitching on the weekends, like, in, real environments, you know, that had some, you know, pressure built into there. So it's not totally random to, or like out of the question to think like maybe they're on to at least something and not being like the worst in the majors in this department.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Oh, that's just fantastic stuff. I have so many, I was like listening to both of you and I wasn't going to interrupt because you guys were making great points, but it was like throughout, I was like, oh man, I want to spotlight that and say something. Oh, I want to spotlight that and say something. It's the blogger in me. I'm like, I want to, I see he has said something really smart and I want to say something about that. So just random thoughts. One, perfectly spotlighting the total absence of pitching development from the farm system there, Mooney. I didn't realize, I mean, pitching wins, obviously, as a statistic is stupid and bad, but it is a useful in this context to like note, okay, how frequently are guys coming through and actually pitching meaningful innings at the big league level? And two guys in a decade? Oh my Lord. And they had like, I think you said they had three in the last 2 weeks, three different guys. So that is wild. So I wanted to just touch on some of the pitching notes to individual pitches there, because I hadn't thought about it that, you know, Alzolay's success, it could be a canary in the coal mine of like how the Cubs now work with pitchers, for which we wouldn't have had a ton of visibility because there was no minor league season last year. These changes obviously were made on the developmental side late 2018 and then all throughout 2019, and you wouldn't necessarily have expected to see and be able to evaluate the fruits of that until 2020, and we didn't have a season. So it is interesting that you point out that, like, again, this is a hyper-specific example because it's one pitcher that's been worked with who's already very, very talented, and it's one pitch. But you do think about, okay, if the Cubs can take a talented arm and shape a pitch for him and develop a pitch for him that becomes literally top three in baseball together with Yu Darvish, we know how good his slider is, and the guy the Cubs are facing tonight, Shane Bieber. Those are the three best sliders in baseball. And that's a pitch that he developed last year for the first time. And it got me thinking too that I believe that Keegan Thompson cutter was new last year. I think it was developed last year throughout the year. I do believe he deployed it in Instructs, Arizona Fall League before the shutdown. I believe it was the first time he was busting it out. I am open to being corrected, but I believe that's right. And Justin Steele's slider, he did have all along, but it was really his curveball that was sort of his signature breaking pitch. And it wasn't until, I believe, same thing, last year, maybe at the alt site, that they started shaping and developing that slider a bit more to make it a more impactful pitch. And now, among relievers, it is one of the most dominating sliders in baseball. And I did want to add, what I always liked about Justin Steele, and you could see this whenever you would see his minor league clips, is he has that fastball that without any data. You just watch it and you're like, you know, that's registering at 94, but it's just like getting on the hitter so much faster than that. And the hitter just looks completely lost if it's in the zone and it's in the upper third. And to that point, it turns out now that we do have data, not only does it have an incredible spin rate, which that's what that like sort of late explosion is, but also it turns out its vertical drop its horizontal movement. Okay. And four seamer, you don't necessarily look for a lot of horizontal movement. It is in the first percentile. It is like a dead straight four seam fastball, which if you have enough rise on that pitch, that's actually a good thing. You don't want it necessarily to be moving in a way that a hitter is used to seeing. You want something extreme. And in his case, apparently, it is super extreme in how little it moves laterally. And obviously, because of the spin, it moves very little drop compared to a typical four-seamer. So he has two very extreme pitches.
Real quickly, two names that get that, like when I was looking, doing research on this, as far as the four seam fastball with Justin Steele, the only guys that get like more in zone swing and miss or just swing and miss on a four seam are like James Karinchak and Aroldis Chapman. Wow. I mean, that's the type of like elite reliever that you're talking about that's able to do this type of stuff. So, I mean, if you don't know who Karinchak is, you'll see him over the next 2 days, Cubs fans, and he's arguably one of the best relievers. He kind of popped on the scene last year, and he's just a dominant reliever.
Really annoying delivery. You'll recognize him immediately because it's like, what is he doing with this? Like, goes way back over. His like body is bending backwards. And no,
I also think he's kind of an insane person on the mound, if I'm remembering correctly.
Oh,
he'll scream
he?
And yell all the time. And yeah, I think he screams at himself. I'm not sure if it's as much at the opponent, but if I'm remembering correctly, I think he kind of just like screams randomly and pumps himself up.
We did see him a little bit last year because of the abbreviated yep. schedule. It was an all central schedule, and I do remember he was. I don't know if he was a rookie last year, if he was brand new, but that was certainly the first time that I had seen him, and I was like, "Who the hell is this guy?" and now he has emerged, like you said, as one of the top relievers in the game. Interesting too that you mentioned him and Chapman and Steele in the same breath as guys that have the most success in the zone with four seamers, because Steele is doing it with like 93, 94 miles per hour. I mean, like he rarely ramps it up to 95 and above. So that tells you that the look that he's providing with that pitch is clearly something special. Okay. Did you want to add anything else, Mooney, to the homegrown pitcher chat?
No, I just can't wait for, don't know who this Cleveland reliever is, but I can't wait if he's yelling on the mound to see which Cubs hitter takes offense to it. And then like they eyeball each other and then like they get out of the dugout, but they don't actually do anything like that. That's my prediction for this series of like the kind of like fake machismo act. If this pitcher delivers in an Amir Garrett type way, that's
But see, there's the rub. It only happens among NL Central teams. I don't know if you guys saw Bob Nightingale wrote an interesting piece for USA Today this week that chronicled the extreme volume of benches clearing incidents among NL Central teams specifically, which I think if you'd asked any of us, we would have thought that maybe anecdotally, like, boy, they do, just like you said, Mooney, there's a lot of like hopping the front step and being like, you talking to me? But it actually turns out that like, even if you went to a statistical level, it is disproportionately frequent in the NL Central. And he kind of went through, he interviewed some folks and went through like, why is that? What is it about these teams? But I mean, I don't think of the Cubs as this like hot-headed team. Although, and I should add too, it's two teams in particular that are like always involved. And you would know
Reds
now that
Pirates.
You think about it. It's the Reds and Pirates.
Okay.
It's like always them.
But, that's immediately who I thought. Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure I was about to say what you were saying. Maybe we just cover the Cubs. We're watching the Cubs so much we don't think of them as the antagonizers, but I'm not surprised it's the Reds and Pirates.
Well, and we had the recent stuff with the Brewers and the Cubs that was, I think, very like particular to a very, you know, to one specific player and the issue that's going on with him. You know what? I'm just going to pivot real quick because I can do it with a plug for The Athletic that Ken Rosenthal wrote something interesting about that kind of relates to this this morning about the dramatic increase in hit-by pitches that we're seeing the last 2 years in baseball, together with so many other things about the game that are spiking to disproportionate levels, we're now seeing by far the fastest rate of hit-by pitches since the 1800s in baseball. When dudes were getting hit in 1800s, it was because it was, you know, everybody was like, how do I throw this pitch? What do I do? Overhand? And now,
and the balls weren't even like standardized, right? They were like,
it was like
16
inch softball they were throwing with. And it was interesting. And it's another one of those points where it's like, well, it makes sense because guys are throwing harder than ever. They view the risk of hitting a guy as not as bad as ever, right? Because it's like, well, I'll strike out the next guy. And increasingly, you want to pitch up and in because the guy, it's harder to barrel. And so, you know, obviously the question is, is this another one of those trends that we can just be like, well, it's just part of the game. It's just the way it's going. Or should we react? You know, we're making a lot of other rules changes. Should we react to this sooner before somebody really gets hurt? And it's a tricky one because there's some interesting possible solutions to disincentivize pitching up and in. But obviously we saw it with the Cubs and Brewers with Wilson Contreras. Like, that's where you want to pitch him because he's not successful up there. But if you can't locate your 97 mile an hour fastball, aren't you being just kind of a dick by continuing to throw up and in there? And if so, how do we change that? Great read from Rosenthal, and feel free to shout out any, if you have the solution to this issue. But obviously it also generates some of that NL Central machismo, as Gallagher said.
Couldn't you just, what if you just hit by pitches now, if it's above the waist, you automatically get to second?
Yes, that's what, so yes, a friend Tommy tweeted that, and I'm like, there's like micro stuff that would become an issue, I'm sure. Like, oh, what counts as above the waist, and is that, yeah, going to review that, and are guys wearing a bunch of body armor to try to, you know, get extra bases, but like something like that. The alternative that I had thought of, so I like that idea. Another alternative is if you hit a guy above the waist, it's an automatic warning, and then your next hit by pitch in the game, regardless of where it is, you're automatically ejected. I feel like that might,
it's like Little League. That's what my son's Little League is. If you hit two batters in one inning, that pitcher has to get sit down.
I mean, that's a pretty good like safety idea, yeah, I suppose. So in your son's league, a lot of high and tight to try to miss the barrel. Huh?
Yeah, they're trying to get guys off the plate. This guy's crowding.
Back up. All right. Good stuff. What a fun, this, you know, it's interesting when you have the podcast recording after an off day and you got some distance from the games, you just kind of can get into some stuff. It's nice. Not that we don't enjoy talking about the individual games too, but sometimes floating through these various little topics, I think, are enjoyable for us and hopefully enjoyable for you folks too. This is On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. Make sure you are rating, reviewing, subscribing, telling your friends, all about the delightful joy that we have here on this show. And thanks to Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Get their stuff at The Athletic. I'm Brett Taylor. You can get my stuff at Bleacher Nation. And we will be back at you later this week after that Indian series. And we can then say more untoward things about James Karinchak, about whatever he does on the mound. So thanks. Take care. And we'll see you soon.